Good morning. How many of you have a friend or someone you know who is depressed or has been depressed at some point in their life? And how many of you feel confident that you could have brought that person to care or knew of a place that could help them? And would you have felt that confident if you were new to the area where you lived or if you didn't speak the main language? Maybe you were visiting in another country, or you actually lived in another country. How would you feel? For many of us, community health workers are a part of our healthcare system, and we really do believe. And it's interesting, actually, the legislation with healthcare reform, it actually identifies community health workers as part of our healthcare workforce. This is the first time in the U.S., I believe, that this language is there. So we're recognizing that community health workers really do make a difference. It'll be interesting to see what happens with reform over the next few years, but let's really explore the impact that community health workers can have on social justice, on really bringing people, increasing people's access to care. So I'm going to describe our project. I'm going to give you some background, why we did what we did, and what impact we had as it relates to implementing a community health worker intervention. As background, we know that Latino adolescents are really at the top of the list when it comes to depressive symptoms, suicidal ideation, suicidal attempts. We also know, as with all youth, parents and family can be really key protective factors, as can schools. Schools are one of the main places where youth's mental health problems are identified and where youth get care for mental health problems. Latino youth are more likely to be seen in a primary care or a school-based setting for mental health care than a mental health specialist. Unfortunately, though, school and parents, if these are our protective factors, we have some problems going on. We have a lot of Latino youth dropping out of school, so school doesn't become a resource for them. We have a lot of Latino families, parents, who for many different reasons really struggle with accessing mental health services for their youth, and I list a few of those here. So I was working with St. Paul Public Schools, one of our main urban school systems in Minnesota, and I also had some friendships and partnerships with one of our main federally qualified healthcare center that serves the Latino community. Together, we were sitting, talking, deliberating about some of these challenges and about some possible solutions. And when I come to the table, I do sometimes know the evidence, I know the research, I know what other programs are working. But when I sit and talk with partners in the school system and partners in the clinic, I'm not there to say, hey, this is what's been done, let's try it here. I'm here to listen, and I say, what's working for you, what's not working, and what do you think would work? And when we have those kind of discussions, grounded in their experiences, grounded in the real issues they're dealing with their population, we're bound to come up with something that we think will be successful. And then we merge it with the literature, and we balance it, and we say, okay, well, that's an idea. It was tried here. It didn't work. So, there's a place for the evidence. There's a place for the research. We came together. We developed Project Wings home visits, and we implemented it. As further background, I'll just put a plug in here for CBPR. How many were at the general session, the opening session? Didn't you love the call to caution in calling everything community-based participatory research and thinking it's all well and good because we give it that label? I really, really appreciated that. And I just throw the slide in here to say that we did pay attention to these principles. We live it and we breathe it. We don't feel the need to preach it a lot because it's just what we do. So what is Project Wings home visits? Well, it was grounded in school. We felt strongly that the community health workers needed to be functioning out of the schools because in the literature you will find families ask for greater connection to the schools. There's language barriers, there's challenges for many of the families we serve. They want to be more linked to school. We also felt strongly that we were linked to the community clinic because that's where a lot of the resources are. So I would argue that a lot of community health worker programs right now are community-based. They are clinic-linked. Very few, and I have yet to hear of one like ours, that are school-based, which is very funny because if you look at the history of schools, it was school nurses who were going into people's homes, helping with lice outbreaks, helping with TB treatments. If you look historically, schools have been the ones who have gone into homes to promote health, to really minimize disease, really go for it. So one of the things that I hope you take out of this project specifically is that a school-based community health worker model is a really great way to go for reaching youth who are in school. It doesn't help us with the youth and families who are not connected to schools, but I think it is a good potential approach. Core to the intervention was bringing in community health workers, which the schools did not currently have. They had English language learner instructors who in the past had visited homes, but because of budget cuts, that's not easy for them to do. And because of budget cuts for school nurses, most of them are no longer doing home visits, if a school even has a nurse or health professional on board. We wanted a program that could exist in the real world and could be sustained when our grant funding ended, which is a challenge. So the key components of the Project Wings home visits were the community health workers. Again, as I said, school-based, community-linked. We had a clear process in place for making referrals or for identifying resources for the families. Critical to our success was a case management meeting, and by this I mean our community health workers met regularly with the nurse or social worker who were more directly supposed to be supervising them, as well as the counselors in the school and the other folks who were working with the families in the schools. This prevented so much confusion, misunderstanding, he said, she said. It really created a great base for us to come together. The school staff would hear what the community health workers were hearing in the home. The community health workers would hear what was being told to the school staff, and together we could problem solve. It was very rich, and it really was a core ingredient for our success. Of course, we were doing home visits and spending time in the home and in the community with the families. We did have a curriculum that we used to guide some of the topics that were addressed in the homes, but as you know, when you get into a home, you have an idea in mind of what you might want to talk about, and when there's a level of trust there, everything else gets thrown at you. So yes, we came to talk about your teen and your relationship with your teen, but oh, I've noticed, why is your heat not on? And it's February in Minnesota. That's kind of cold. Right? So the reality of the things that that are going on in people's lives. Here's a list of the topics that we covered. And I gave you the complete list, but then I took number 4 and gave you an example of the objectives. So for each of the topics, we had objectives that we hoped that the families would, that the parents would come away with some level of knowledge or understanding related to that topic. This is important because we wanted to at least have some way to check in and have continuity across our community health workers, make sure that we were trying to accomplish the same kind of goals. If you just have a topic and no objectives, obviously that's a lot more challenging. And when I say curriculum as in terms of resources, a lot of the resources we pulled were national. When I submitted an article for publication to talk about kind of our process, one of the reviewers' critiques that came back was, well, did you use evidence-based information to educate these families? And when I mentioned this to my community colleague from the public school system, she laughed and she said, oh my gosh, if we had to use evidence-based information to relate to our families, we would have no information. Because most of the education and the resources we use, they really aren't necessarily evidence-based. There are evidence-based programs, but are you going to tell me this fact sheet is evidence-based? And I would love to discourse more about that if people are in that area, for example, because it was very interesting. So how did we get families? We were in the schools. We made some presentations at some of the school gatherings. The most successful strategy, once the school staff were really involved, so we had school partners involved in the process that were in leadership roles, and then there were a few who were at kind of ground level. But it was bringing all the school staff who were working with Latino youth together. Early on, we had a meeting. We told them about the project. When they were on board, they went out, and every time they were talking to Latino families, they were mentioning the program and saying, would you be interested in this program? There was one individual in particular, and he brought us most of the families in our project. He mentioned it. He advocated for the program. You need to have people like that in the system if you're not within the system yourself to really be successful. We wanted families who were Latino. They needed to be interested and kind of willing to do the project. But we didn't have anything specific in terms of immigration status or any of that. It was very open. So who did we get? Well, this was piloted over one school year, and we had about 19 families. I don't have data in terms of how many families would have been eligible, but we did end up with 19 families. Each family received on average about 6 home visits. Some did receive more and some fewer. All of them were immigrant, Spanish-speaking Latino families and parents. And this is really important to me because when we said they just needed to be Latino, this is a setting in St. Paul where we do have more of our new immigrants coming to reside, but we do have second and third generation and U.S.-born youth in these schools. So it was very interesting to me that the families that signed up, and it makes sense, they were the ones that needed information. They were not as well connected either with other folks in the community or with resources. I give you a few demographics about the parents so you have a picture of who they are. Of course, most of them were female. They had 3 or more children. Most were working full-time. Of course, 3 out of 4 approximately didn't have insurance coverage of any type, just extremely common. 60% of them indicated that they were able to talk to their teens about their feelings, which was very interesting to me because a similar question of the youth being able to talk to their parents, it wasn't quite as high. So parents often perceive their abilities are greater than they really are. The youth, even though the intervention was geared toward educating the parents and providing knowledge and information to the parents, there were youth, we surveyed the youth as well, and there were often youth in the home when the home visit was going on, so the youth were getting information as well. Again, half were about female, mean age 16. I give you a few interesting demographics on their baseline survey. I feel that belonging to a gang is part of representing my ethnic group. This was interesting where their mean response was they were quite a bit stressful about this particular item on a stress scale. This school is known for its gang activity, but when the parents were asked about being worried about their youth being involved in a gang, fewer than 25% indicated that. So again, kind of different perceptions and ideas between the parents and the teens. And then in terms of feeling that they're doing just as well as other kids their age, this is nice. Most of them felt pretty good. So what did the community health workers find when they went into the homes? What were the things that were needed? Well, you see a list here of the referrals and the resources that were provided. When we started this project, our goal was to promote more connection to school and to really increase the parents' understanding of the mental health problems that their youth might face. The reality is that in the home, we were addressing food support, we were addressing some of the mental health related things, more directly related, for example, where the family could have fun as a family in the community. We have a great example that we love where the community health worker took the bus with the family so they could learn the bus system. They went to the library, they learned how to get, and they were able to obtain library cards. All of a sudden, a wealth of resources opened up to them that they had no idea, for free, I can do this. These are the kind of resources that you might not think will contribute to mental health, but I would argue they very much do. And if you look at Maslow's hierarchy, addressing food, heat, clothing, that's pretty critical for any of us to feel good, safe, secure, and happy. The dry erase boards, the calendar, the daily planners, these are things that we might take for granted or we think they're very simple, but honestly, that communication board for some families where the mom would just write a note to her son, the son would write a note back, that was an intervention. That was an improvement for that mom to be able to actually have a mechanism to communicate when their schedules were completely different and they hardly ever were in the home at the same time. Here are a few quotes. We did, I don't have a lot of outcome data to show you in terms of pre-post survey. Those data, that analysis is ongoing, but we did do a focus group, and we had 7 of the families represented, so not all of them, there were 19. But I want to give you a few of the quotes here. I really do love this first one. "He was like an angel who fell into our home." Well, that angel is here in this room. We have one of the community health workers here. The other community health worker was originally going to give this presentation, and due to childcare things, she's back in Minnesota. But Evan is here, so we should wave at him, our little angel, which is just so cute. Yeah, I know I'm embarrassing him, but I love it. Provided education. There was moral support, emotional support. He taught me how to talk to adolescents, how to be the parent of an adolescent. And then here's a much longer quote, and I'll let you read it in whichever language you prefer, but I find it very nice. Sort of the example I was referring to earlier, and there are others like it. So in conclusion, there are a lot of challenging, complex issues related to mental health, the mental health of adolescents, connecting them to school, promoting school success, making sure families have the tools they need to access those mental health services that are in the community. It's complex. There are numerous ways to address the problem. Community health workers are a very promising way to do it. The fact that they were housed in the schools and had really good connection to the school staff really, really made a difference for this program. The school staff love it. The parents, there's a monthly Latino parent meeting K through 12, and at those meetings, those parents who were not in the pilot school have been asking over and over, how can we get that program into our school? We want that. We want someone coming into our home. This will not work for all cultural groups. It would not work for all communities, but for the Latino community, at least in Minnesota, it is really appealing to them that someone would come to their home, that they can welcome them in. Our community health workers were trusted. They were invited to quinceañeras. They were invited to parties, to meals. They often had to share a meal. Not had to, they wanted to. The food was great. You know, those kind of things just set this sort of model up for a lot of great success. The sustainability is a challenge, and I would just say that we have ongoing discussions about that. You know, that's just, it's always going to be an issue. In schools, if you can show that your program is increasing attendance or performance, if you link to those school outcomes, you will get funding for your program because you are getting kids to school, you're keeping them there, you're keeping them healthy. So our example is mental health, but I would argue that it could also prove very effective for kids with asthma, for obesity prevention, diabetes care and management. This kind of a model, if you can show, hey, these kids are being cared for more effectively, more efficiently, they're in school more, that's our best selling point for a school-based community health worker program. Thank you.
Thank you, Carolyn, and thank you for bringing your community health worker, Evan.
Tomorrow.
Excellent. Good, because it's one of the roles of this section is to encourage not just the supervisors and directors of community health worker programs to attend at events like this, but also to provide mechanisms to bring the community health workers to these types of events, and we love to hear their voices. We do offer scholarships through the section for community health workers to attend this conference, so it's something to look into in the future as well.